And
thanks, Dave. So I'm going to report information on a single fishery that was first introduced to this workshop at the second workshop by Kyle Attic. I made the mistake of mentioning to Dave Hankin at the end of at the first break after that talk that the panel didn't ask any questions about Kyle's talk. And I was rewarded by being asked to give this talk, so thanks, Dave. So, as I said, I'm going to be talking about a single fishery. This is going to relate to killer whales, stock and age and size of selectivity. And now that I'm at my back, I can't see them there at the same time. So we're talking about 2009 Chinook recreational fishery from the San Juan Islands. And what we did is that we have samples for roughly over 450 individual fish, Chinook, that were taken from this recreational fishery. And we conducted a genetic stock identification. The methods are pretty much similar to what has been discussed earlier. We use the CTC GAPS baseline. And so in addition to having a stock ID for each one of these fish, we also have an age measurement, which is a scale age, and a fork length measurement. So we're able to look at all three of these components together and spin a little bit of the story. I'm also going to compare the distribution, the stock distribution, from this recreational catch to the killer whale diet that was published in Hansen et al. 2010. And you'll see that there isn't a direct temporal overlap between the two, so I'm not comparing what is effectively available to the whales with this study, but there's some definitely interesting information that comes from this. And then I'm also going to talk about stock-specific age and size in the recreational catch. I'm going to make three main points from this discussion. The first is that the stock composition from the recreational catch is different, and it's very different from that of the killer whale diet. But again, the sampling for the recreational catch and the killer whale diet differs in years. The killer whale diet study was from 2004 through 2008, and this information was from 2009. And there is also a slight difference in location. That's also going to become important. I'm also going to show that there's no difference in the size and age distribution between the Fraser and the Puget Sound stocks. And that's including the hatchery stocks from Puget Sound and the recreational catch. And the reason why this is important is that the panel had made, at least in two places in the report, a statement that the killer whales would prefer Fraser stocks because those stocks are older and larger. And what we're going to show, at least in the recreational catch, that finding is not true. And taking these two things together, there are large Chinook fish available to the killer whales, and they're not. If you do take these things together and you make a statement about the killer whales diet, the recreational catch representing what is available to the killer whales, that in fact the killer whales are not foraging in all the areas where they can catch large Chinook, and that'll become a little bit more apparent later on in the talk. The only difference is that fish that they would are not catching are Puget Sound fish versus the Fraser fish. So first, the study area. These are the points, the geographic locations that we have for each one of the fish that are caught. The bubbles are the size, the total number of fish taken, so these large bubbles represent 21 to 57 fish, and the small ones represent one fish taken from that geographic area. This was from July through September in, like I said, 2009. I'm going to point out that there's a line that you can draw right from here. This area right here is a sub-area of Marine Fishing Area 7, and it's 7A, and I'll mention some information about that area in a later slide. But you can see that, you know, the fish that we have information from fishing in a large general area around the San Juan Islands here. We don't have information along Lummi or along this coast here. I'm going to summarize all the information. As I said, if you notice that this is 437, this is 445 right here. There's some eight fish that we don't have location information for. That's the difference in the numbers here. I'm going to basically break all the stocks into basically three areas: Fraser River, Puget Sound, and other. And that's just to simplify it. The Fraser River is composed mostly, and we've got 101 fish from the Fraser River, composed mostly of lower Fraser and South Thompson fish. the Puget Sound, we had 297 fish that we've got, that we were able to get samples from, that we identified as South Puget Sound, that were identified as Puget Sound, and most of those fish are South Puget Sound fall fish. And you can see from this column, marked and unmarked. Marked basically means that they have the adipose fin removed, and they're a hatchery fish. Unmarked fish don't have the adipose fin removed, but they could be hatchery fish, but most of them are probably not hatchery fish. You can see that for most of the fish that we caught, that were identified as Puget Sound, most of those fish were indeed hatchery fish. The other category here, it was only 47% in the other category. Nearly half of those are from East Vancouver Island. I noted that I had Straits of Juan de Fuca, five here. Normally I would put that in Puget Sound, but we had five fish from there. Incidentally, we had five fish from Southeast Alaska, three fish from, and a bunch of fish from Columbia River. But I'm going to report them only as Fraser, Puget Sound, and other. This is from Hansen et al. 2010. You notice the distribution of their fish. I can zoom in on here and compare this. So this is where we caught our fish from, right here. And you notice that there is not a direct overlap. The most immediate area of overlap is this area right over here, which represents these fish, that represents this area here. Most of our fish in our study are from this area right here, which there is no information for right here. And like I said, there's a bunch of fish that were the whales caught along Lummi, along this coast, and up by Point Roberts. We have one fish from Point Roberts, two fish from Point Roberts. Because of this, the way it's broken down, I divided our area into a north area, a southeast area, and a southwest area. There was nothing, this wasn't based on any kind of geographic analysis. I just drew a line here, and I just counted the fish here and here and here. It just simplifies it a little bit. So these are the distributions. Now, this information, as I said, Kyle reported this information already, but I'm now going to show this in contrast with Hansen. This area right up over here, both of these areas are, as you can see, dominated nearly entirely, over 75% by Puget Sound fish. And the sample sizes are fairly large, 63, but we've got 264 here. Fraser was the next largest, but it's going to be less than 25%. This area is made up of almost half Fraser fish, and Puget Sound and other making up the other portion, Puget Sound being two-thirds of that composition. Now, this is a composite. This is from July through September. I will show a slide in a little bit how these proportions do change with time between, you know, when you go from July, August, and September. This one point up here, these two fish right here, there aren't any Puget Sound fish there. We have a mid-Fraser fish there, and then one Columbia River, upriver bright, is called it. It's a very lost fish. So just to compare this with the Fraser fish, I mean from the Hansen et al., and this was a composite from May through September from 2004 to 2008. They have 105 fish in this, and you can see it's nearly entirely Fraser fish. The second bit was Puget Sound, and then a close third was the other category. Again, I summarized their findings in just about the same way that I saw that these were summarized here. And again, this represents all of these areas together, and we have these separated. And Hansen doesn't have fish from here, and I don't have fish from up over around here for the most part. So I do want to just throw this in. This is from a different fishery. This is from a 2006 study that we did from a Chinook bycatch in the Lummi Treaty sockeye fishery. And this fishery took place from July through August 2006. So it's encompassed in this time period. And this was from this area. Remember, I drew that line. And these fish from up here, from this catch here, were identified nearly entirely as Fraser fish, and most of these fish were from South Thompson. And there's a little sliver there of Puget Sound, but basically there probably was one fish identified there as Puget Sound. So you can see that there is a spatial distribution of the fish, right, at least from what we get from the fishery, and that the fish up here in this general area are dominated by Fraser stocks. So this is dividing the cache into the different time periods. Now, to simplify it, I just simply did the proportion that are Fraser fish. Now, there's only three categories. The other category is a minor category, so you can just think that the inverse of this is going to be Puget Sound fish. So in July, even in this southwest area right here, there's very little Fraser fish. It's less than 20%. For all three of these areas, it's less than 20%. While Hansen had it basically upwards around 95%. As you move from July to August, the amount of Fraser fish occurring in here, in all three areas, they increase, but they increase dramatically in this area from basically being less than 20% to being over, you know, close to 60%. And you can see from this area right here, they've increased. This area that stays pretty level right here, we don't really get more than 20% Fraser fish in this area. In this northern area, we do increase, steadily increase. And then it goes down a little bit. While Hansen had these things going down, the sample size is much smaller with the Hansen et al., but it got only as low as 75%. So there is a seasonal component to the distribution of the stocks as they're reflected in the recreational catch. So shifting now to the age information. These two tables show basically the same information. This is just the actual numbers, and these are the proportions, and it's just a lot easier to look at here. So I have age information from all these, from all the fish. Oh, no, I don't have age. I'm missing 83, so it's 360 fish that I have age information from. I should add that this is a fishery, and there's a size limit. So there's a ceiling to the size, which means that there's going to be a ceiling or floor to the age. So these are probably underrepresented in terms of what fish may be present out there. They're just not reflected in the fishery itself, and you'll see that with the size of. But you can see here that there's no difference really between the Fraser and Puget Sound in terms of the age of the fish in the fishery. 47% of the fish that we caught that were identified as Fraser, right, were aged at 4 years old, while 56% of Puget Sound were aged as 4 years old. We have very few five-year-old fishes in the catch. Only total five, and three of the five were identified as Fraser fish. So how does this translate into size of these fish? So this is fork length by age, and I pooled all the stocks in all the areas just to get some information on that. So again, we have some no data here. These are the two-year-old fish right here. This is the legal limit. Legal limit is 22 inches total length, and I converted that to around 52 fork length measurement. So that's the limit right here, and you can see they sort of butt up right against that here. There are some illegal fish that were taken. Age two, 3, 4, and 5, you can see they go up. Basically, the median value, these are the box plots, this is median value. The median value for the four-year-old fish is roughly 800 millimeters. I also put here these dots. These dots represent the mean fork length that I got from the Ford and Ellis 2006 paper, but I guess the information came from Kuhn 1988. They're from a fishery. And the only reason why I put these up here is so that because we have a fishery here, and we don't have full representation of the length here. These fish from this fishery are roughly the same size per age as the fish that we're catching, we can see that there is a bias upwards for the age 2 and age 3 fish in terms of their fork length. But we're pretty much, I think, capturing the appropriate fork length for the age 4 and 5-year-old fish here. Breaking these up now in terms of age and stock that these fish were identified to, pooling all the areas. And we have no data here, the age 2 fish, but we'll concentrate on the age 4 fish, and you can see that this is first box is Fraser, the next box is Other, and the last box is Puget Sound. And there's really no differences in the size distribution between the 4-year-old fish from Fraser and Puget Sound. And these are the sample sizes up here. So they're represented by nice sample sizes. The age 3 fish, basically the same size. All of these categories pretty much have the same size between the Fraser and Other and Puget Sound. Again, very few fish as 5-year-olds, but they're all roughly the same size, all five. Actually, they're not. We've got variation here, but the median. These two individuals are the same as that median here of 3 fish. So, fork length by location and stock, and these pooled the ages now. So we're just looking to see if there are differences in the overall sizes of the fish in each one of these three areas. And this north area here, again, the size overlap is tremendous between Fraser, Other, and Puget Sound. Puget Sound actually has a higher median, but nothing's going to be significant there. The southeast area right here, again, no differences in size among the three stocks. And not only that, there doesn't appear to be any difference in size in all three geographic areas. So it appears like the fish in the fishery, regardless of the overall age, these fish are roughly the same size, no matter what area you're in and what stock you belong to. So there are lots of fish available to these whales in this area that are of the size class that they seem to be eating. I use the word lots, I don't know if it's lots. So, and I just threw this in here because in the report from the panel, they did make a statement that hatchery fish are smaller than wild fish, and at least from the data that we have, and this is just Puget Sound only because that's where most of the hatchery fish are. Again, marked are hatchery fish, unmarked are most likely wild fish. And you can see that there doesn't seem to be a major difference in the size between hatchery fish and wild fish. Okay, so I have a couple of things just to add to the end here where I get speculation. Yeah, I'm close. So this is from Hauser et al. 2007, and it shows the distribution of at least the kernel density distributions of these of the killer whales for J, K, and L. There may be people in this room know a lot more about this and thinks that these distributions are not correct, but I'm just going to go with this here. But these are based on observations, and the most of the occurrences are occurring along the west side of San Juan Island, then up in towards the Channel Islands here. There is some distribution here going across Rosario Strait, but there does not appear to be a lot of whale activity within the interior part of the San Juan Islands. Let me just contrast that now with where we caught our samples and where the diet information from the killer whales were from. So again, we're catching a lot of 800 millimeter fish in this area that the whales are not basically using. I don't know why they're not using it. They're Puget Sound fish, they're not Fraser fish. Maybe Puget Sound fish don't taste as good. But it seems that there are fish there. There may be other reasons why they're not going there. There's a lot of boat traffic there. There's a lot of fishing activity there. There's a lot of ferry activity going on there. But the point I'm trying to make, and this is entirely speculation, is that based on the 2009 fishery, again, really just one data point, we have distribution of fish, and there are a lot of fish in this area that are from Puget Sound that seem to be large enough to be eaten by whales. But the whales don't generally come in that area. And I think that's it. Just thank the LOA for funding this this study on for 2009, the Independent Science Panel for my invitation here, field samplers, recreational fishers, the people in the genetics lab. Andy Weiss made the map, and Scott Blankenship, who's now with Kramer Fish Sciences, he did the first iteration on the doing the genetic stock identification, so I want to thank him for that initial work. So, thanks.
Thanks, Ken. Questions from the science panel first?
Thank you.
Okay.
Was that what you wanted?
Okay.
Yeah.
Sure. Oh, sorry. Just start here. Sorry.
So that was great. Very interesting. I'd like to add some perspective to the killer whale use that you showed. Donna's stuff is right on, and there was another paper that Aaron Ash, Rob Williams, and I published that looked at foraging in particular, and it overlaps a lot with where Brad has been finding most of his samples. It's not that they're not sampling around the San Juan Islands, the whole region, but that is actually where they're foraging, and there's another paper that I have in prep with Donna Hauser that shows the same thing. So that southwest side is a hot spot for foraging, and it's been shown even in papers that are 20 to 30 years old. So it's not surprising that there's a lot of Fraser, River Chinook that you're finding in that area as well.
And there's not a lot of foraging in this area.
That's correct.
Okay. There's fish there.
What are the relative, and for this year, the relative terminal run sizes of Puget Sound versus Fraser fish?
Guys, any information on that?
In other words, what's the relative abundance?
Right.
Fraser is much larger than Puget Sound.
Right.
2009.
Really?
It has been.
I don't know the answer. Pat's saying that he thinks that the Frasier.
I mean, it would be worthwhile checking the different stock components of Frasier, and you know, I don't want to just throw out something, but it, generally Frasier stocks are much larger in abundance than Puget Sound.
I think in workshop one, we presented a short paper for the panel that summarizes the terminal run size of Frasier.
For workshop one, we had presented a paper for the panel which summarized the terminal run sizes by each of the major stock groups. So, is that, were you looking for an average, Ray, or were you?
No, just for that year. Just.
Yeah, just for 2009, we can provide more specific information.
Yeah, and I don't think that, at least from what we looked at it, there was anything anomalous about 2009. Adam, do I select the people who talk, or
hey, Ken, I'm Paul Riles.
We'll get to everybody, I think.
Tim Tynan, No Fisheries. I thought Paul Riles was going to speak up maybe for 2009, but I work with sockeye a lot, and I think germane to this discussion is the migration corridor that Chinook bound to the Fraser use. Sockeye in particular switch between Rosario and Harrow, and depending upon the stock mix that's coming in a particular year, and I'm wondering if anybody knows what Fraser Chinook would tend to do, whether they use Rosario or Harrow in a given year.
Well, you know, one of the things I was looking at this morning before my talk blew up on me, pie charts weren't coming out, was that if you look at the numbers, actually, I don't think I have the numbers for each one of the areas here, but the in terms of total numbers of Fraser fish using this area versus these areas, there are more Fraser fish that we have that are using this area than this area, but the main reason why the Fraser fish numbers are so low in percentage in this area is that there's just so many more Puget Sound fish now. So at least from the fishery, there are Fraser fish swimming through here. They're being caught in the fishery. So they may be using this corridor more than anything else, but they can be found in this area. I mean, 35 out of 200, for example, I think was in this area, right there.
I think I'll play director here. So Allison.
Okay. Yeah. I was just wondering. I'm pretty sure this is the case, but is the hole in fishing effort kind of off the lower end of San Juan Island, is that explained because of a fishing closure area? Or because the whales are, you know, picking up fish there, but it doesn't appear that the fishers are?
Pat?
It's closed in July.
This area right here?
If you just go to where the hole in the, and there's no red kind of in that area?
That area is closed.
That area. Okay.
Okay.
Or at least part of the summer.
At the end of your talk, you speculated that perhaps the whales aren't foraging in your prime fishing area because of vessel traffic. How many boats do you speculate are, or do you know, are participating in your recreational fishery?
What's that?
How many boats are participating in that recreational fishery?
I don't know that either. I'm not the fishing guy. I'm the genetics guy. So, Pat, John, Kyle, who's out there counting boats? Sam, do you know?
The question was how many boats are participating in the recreational fishery?
Well, yeah, I mean, the speculation was perhaps the whales weren't in that, foraging in the area because of vessel traffic. So I'm just trying to figure out how many additional vessels to overall vessel traffic baseline is associated with.
Right. I don't really know
conducting the recreational fishery.
Whether the whales were avoiding that area as a foraging area, I don't know that. I just threw that out of speculation. So, but just another possibility.
But I think it'd be informative to say how many recreational boats are there. They're brought to the area just because of the fishing. I mean, it's not that many. How many?
I don't know. Yeah. So we'll have to get that.
One observation is that it's not just the abundance of fish, but the catchability of fish.
Right.
And the west side of San Juan Island is, if you just were to look at fish is being planktonic for a minute, about 60% of the oceanic water coming in the Strait of Juan de Fuca goes up Harrow Strait just by, because it's a wider strait. And the west side of San Juan Island, the largest blob on the bottom is an area known as Salmon Bank. Didn't get that name for nothing. And the whales appear to use the shoreline as a herding technique. So the fish have one angle where they can't escape is up against the wall of the west side. So I believe we see much more of that activity, both in terms of, by probability, more fish are going up there just because that's where the flow is, as well as the fact that the herding techniques that the fish use are up against that wall.
Yeah, absolutely. The fish, they may have, even if there were no boats present, the fish, they may have lower foraging efficiency in these areas.
And just in terms of commercial vessel traffic, Harrow Strait has far more commercial vessel traffic than Rosario Strait.
Well, that's because the species that are being targeted over there. But I'd like to touch on what Fred just said. That's exactly the reason that salmon banks has been a major fishery for the U.S. for over 100 years. That's an area where the bathymetry rises, and it's a natural herding area where the fish come off the bottom as they're migrating up the Strait of Juan, and they're subject to harvest there. But I'm wondering if your catch distribution map there is explained by proximity to marinas. Anacortes, it's not a long run. You have a lot of concentrated fisheries in there, and Skagit fish are milling in there. There are studies from the 60s that show that, Chinook salmon. And it's a long run from Anacortes to Harrow.
Yeah, certainly the distribution of people is going to be explained like that. I was more concerned about the distribution of the whales.
What I think Susan had a
I just have a couple of questions. One's just basic. So that reflects the sampling, but that I'm assuming that also does reflect the fishery itself. So that's reflective of the fishery?
This?
Yeah.
I'd have to go back to what we said in the report in terms of effort, the fishery effort, and where we got samples from. But I believe that the samplers were trying to do as good of a comprehensive job in terms of representing the fishery.
Okay.
But I have to go back in terms of.
And do you get a sense of whether that's a composite of the fishery in that year, do you get a sense of whether the fishery changes over time? Sort of you have the graph of, July, August, September. Do you get a sense that if you map that, it would look different for each of those months?
Pat, John, Tim. Kyle's not watching.
Are you asking if the distribution of fishers, anglers, changes over the months?
Yeah.
Yes, it does.
Year to year, I thought you were asking.
No, well, I'm using this as a representative year. So does it change within a year? Sort of you had a graph that indicated what the stock composition was by month.
Yeah.
I was interested whether the math would change.
Yes,
by
it does. I'm sorry, I thought you were asking year to year. We actually have, I didn't show that, but we have, I showed it as a composite, but I only have 15 minutes. But we have maps for every 2 weeks in that time period, and it does change pretty dramatically as to where the fish are being caught. I don't know if that means that the fishers' behaviors, the anglers' behaviors are changing, but just where we have the samples from do change every 2 weeks. Sorry.
So I think we need to move on, if that's okay. I just get a schedule. So if you have other questions, Dan and Bob, great. Thank you.